exit. I'm the man you're looking for. Here, USB, check it out. Oh man, Eric is in. Brain damage. Here's Sid Barrett, and then the concert Bilbo with the concert Bimbo.
There will be shoulder pressing in the hall, and I won't know if you're here.
This is Erica with your concert billboard update for Sunday, September 20th. Tonight, Indigo Girls at Central Park Summer Stage, Howie Mandel at Westbury Music Fair, an acoustic blues festival at Cedar Beach with Little Toby Walker and the Rocket, Backdoor Benny, the Mike Scholes Band, and Guy Davis. Wednesday, September 23rd, John Armour Trading at the Beacon Theater. Thursday, September 24th, John Armour Trading at the Beacon Theater. Soul Asylum and Thelonious Monster at Trance and the Breeders at CBGB. Friday, September 25th, Richie Havens at IMAC. Gallagher at Westbury Music Fair, The Ocean Blue, Kitchens of Distinction, Kingmaker, and Too Much Joy at Town Hall and the Breeders at CBGB. Saturday, September 26th, Gallagher at Westbury Music Fair. The Fleshtones at Maxwell's, and Carter the Unstoppable Sex Machine, The Sextons, Gene Loves Jezebel, and Mary's Danish at the Palladium. Sunday, September 27th, Gallagher at Westbury Music Fair and Dream Theater and Nonfiction at Limelight. Tuesday, September 29th, Glenn Fry at the Beacon Theater and Squelch at Moondancer. Thursday, October 1st, Spin Doctors and the Wallflowers at Roseland and the Connells and Tommy Keen at the Marquee. Friday, October 2nd, Elton John at Madison Square Garden, Alan Holdsworth at IMAC, The Roaches at Town Hall, Delamitri and Gin Blossoms at Irving Plaza, and Dixie Drags at the Ritz. Saturday, October 3rd, Elton John at Madison Square Garden. Sunday, October 4th, Ugly Kid Joe at Limelight. And Monday, October 5th, Elton John at Madison Square Garden and Jethro Tull at the Beacon Theater. Concert billboard can be heard weekdays, 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., and on weekends at noon and at midnight. If you have any questions, call the station at 632-6901, and stay tuned to 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook.
And good morning to everybody as we play the unofficial Brain Damage theme. That theme becomes official when it's played 90% of the time, and I don't believe it's been played at all over the last few weeks, has it, Matt?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm not even sure what it is.
Ah, and I'm not about to tell you either what it is, because that would endanger the unofficial status of the theme. It could very well, by default, become the official theme, and then it just wouldn't be cool anymore.
Okay.
You need to have a cool theme these days if you want to survive. Well, I want to say thanks for filling in all this time and putting up with all kinds of things that must have gone on here while I was away.
It wasn't all that bad.
Yeah, I know how it can get. I know how these people can be. They can be trying. They can be relentless. They can be, in a word, frightening.
Oh, yes.
Did you have nightmares?
Nah.
Really? Not
nah,
one? Not one nightmare. I had nightmares when I was in Europe thinking about this.
After a while, you get so used to it that you just leave it behind you and leave the studio.
Uh-huh. That's I admire that. That's really good. I wish I could do that. I've been in therapy now for a number of years trying to do that. And I wish I knew the secret. But enough about me. How have you been?
Oh, I've been rather well.
Kevin, you've been okay? You're fine? Everyone's fine? And of course, you know the theme is fine, and all of our listeners are fine, and the world's kind of messed up, I guess.
One has not been
changed.
Messed up.
Yeah, I know. But, all right, I've got some interesting things here. This one really caught my eye. Very one of those little tiny New York Times things that show up, you know, if you could fit in the palm of your hand. The Defense Department today declassified existence of a National Reconnaissance Office, which gathers intelligence through space and airborne technology like spy satellites. The United States had never acknowledged the agency during its 30-year existence. So the title of the article was 30-year spying agency is disclosed by the Pentagon. So, the National Reconnaissance Office, which never existed before.
But who was processing all that information we were picking up from spy satellites all these years?
Well, you know, you kind of thought it was the NSA doing that. But apparently there is another group or something that was a subsidiary of them. You know, let's see how secretive this really is. Let's get on the old phone and go down to Washington, D.C. and see if they have a phone number. Do you think they do?
These guys?
Yeah. I mean, they're declassified. They should have one by now.
Sure, they should have some kind of direct
phone. How do you call the people if, you know, you don't know what their phone number is?
City, this is Lane.
Yes, I'm looking for the nation's capital, Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Okay, the number for the National Reconnaissance Office, please.
Just a moment.
Thank you. Probably opening up a file on me right now for doing this.
As we wait,
I hear her rifling through.
I don't show anything listed under that title.
Nothing on the National Reconnaissance Office.
No, sir.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, I'll have to check further then. Thank you so much.
It's very possible that
the paperwork will be handled on Monday.
CNP Telephone or whoever is now in charge of the system down there probably has not gotten an updated listing on the declassified agency.
Yeah, I guess that must go through maybe once or twice a week when they declassify things, but it's something to see things like that happening.
Well, also, I always wondered, you move into a new place in the middle of the year, and not naturally your name doesn't appear in the phone book until the following year. Are you still listed, and can somebody still find your number by dialing information?
Sure. Oh, yeah, that's instantaneous.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, that's instant. And there's a difference, too, because you can be not listed in the phone book and listed in information. That's like a separate sort of semi-unlisting. Or you can be unlisted in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can have your address omitted from a listing. A lot of people don't know that.
That's wild.
Just have your address taken out, or just put your town name in, or anything you want. But, and a secret, an important secret, those of you that have your phones unlisted, do you know that when you call up and ask the operator, they will be able to tell you the address, even though they cannot tell you the phone number. Unless you have the address omitted. But you didn't know that.
No.
You didn't know that, did you? So if you have, say, like Ralph Cramden, and he decides to have his phone number unlisted, if you ask the operator, is that on such and such a street?
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to say yes or no. That technically they can't give you the address, but if you have an idea where it is, they can. I've done this. I've played guessing games with the operator where I say, is it higher than 25? And they say yes. And I say, is it higher than 100? And they say no. And then, you know, we sort of do that for a few. And it's gone on for quite some time, too. You wouldn't think that operators would do this kind of thing, but they like to have fun just like everybody else.
Do they get their pay docked if they stay on the line with somebody too long?
Well, generally after, you know, an hour or so, if you're still on the line with the same customer, it's frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they take a dim view of that at the management offices.
Actually, they're not the only ones. I remember applying for a job at a bank, one which shall remain nameless because there's really no point. They probably all do it.
Nameless bank, huh?
Yes, a nameless bank. And no, they have great interest rates, too.
A bank with no name would actually be an advantage in many ways, because then when the scandals hit, people won't really know. You know, they'll notice a bank with no name, but if there's several banks with no names, it could protect you, actually.
Well, I was applying.
Imagine not having a name yourself.
This customer service rep position.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a look at this little computer monitor that the manager had next to his desk, and it measured how many calls were being taken, how many were being processed, and how long each one took. So obviously they're going by the same standards as telephone operators do.
Uh-huh, yeah, productivity.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly you can process people.
Instead
important.
Instead of how satisfied said people are.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the call processing things you get when you call something. They say, hey, if you have a touchtone phone, press this, and then you have to press all these buttons to get information. You ordinarily could have just asked a person that picked up the phone.
But on the other hand, that other person at the computer terminal would be pushing the buttons either way.
Well, no, I mean,
the
person would
get pushed.
The person would be picking up the phone. For instance, let me give you an example of that, too, because I have a bone to pick with lots of people, actually, but our own university hospital here at Stony Brook. Listen to this, what you have to go through. You used to just get somebody saying, hello.
Thank you for calling the University Hospital.
You don't get that anymore.
If you are calling from a touchtone telephone, you can enter the number of the department you wish to reach at any time during this recording. For patient location, touch 0. For emergency department, touch 1.
You know anybody who's in the hospital right now?
Touch 2.
No, I don't.
For the hospital billing or business office, touch 3. For the outpatient clinics, touch 4. If you would like the directions to or the address of the hospital, touch 5. For either the Lyme disease hotline, the AIDS hotline,
yeah, I hope nobody's
or the
in a
cancer
hurry.
Hotline, touch 6. For general information, touch 0. If you would like to replay this message, touch 7. If you are calling from a rotary telephone, please stay on the line and the next available operator will help you. Thank you.
Now, you know, I think a better way of doing something like that would be to say, if you have a touchtone phone, press something now. Otherwise, hold on. And just say that. Nothing else. You don't list all of this over and over and over. And you know, a person has to wait about a minute before they even have a chance of getting a human.
Yes, and not only that. Let's say, normally, standard procedure is if you dial up a number, it answers, and you hang up within, I guess, 15 seconds or something like that, you're not filled.
Mm-hmm.
But while you're listening to this, and you're still not finding what you want, you're still paying for the call.
Actually, I don't know if you're talking about regular phone or these roam phones here, but regular phone bills almost instantly.
Really?
After about 1 second. Mm-hmm. You can make a phone call, and if you can complete the phone call in 1 second, you won't get billed for it.
Oh, that's nice.
That is true. But that works from pay phones, too.
Yeah, that's one of the bad things about answering machines, because especially if you're somebody has a long-winded message,
you're talking about my answering machine, aren't you?
No.
Well, my answering machine does have a long-winded message, but
does.
I have a lot of things to tell people.
But no, I'm talking about
can't help it.
People in general that have these things,
mm-hmm.
And you start to think you're probably better off not having the answering machine at all, because at least if you're on the other end. Because now you are spending money for the call and you are not talking to the person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were calling from, let's say, Europe or someplace like that, that can actually add up.
Oh, it's a real pain. But it gets worse than that. Because when you have beepers and things, you know, somebody beeps you. That's one phone call. You call them back. No, actually, somebody calls your answering machine, okay? Mm-hmm. This is better. Someone calls your answering machine, one phone call, leaves a message there. Your answering machine then calls your beeper. That's two calls. Your beeper then calls you, three calls. Then you call your answering machine to see what the message was in the first place, four calls. And then you call the person that left the message on your answering machine, and you reach his voicemail, five calls.
You know.
And you haven't even talked to anybody yet.
And what's even better, somebody in the deep bowels of AT&T, MCI, and all those came up with this
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, there are ways we can make money without people even talking to each other.
That's right.
And that's how they do it. I have another question, and maybe some of our listeners can answer this because they're of the age group which seems to be affected by this. Why do people, young people, I'm talking about anywhere between the ages of 15 and 25, carry beepers all the time?
They're all drug dealers. All teenagers today are drug dealers. You didn't know that? Oh, I thought everybody knew that. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it started.
The only reason you'd have a beeper...
I see teenage girls carrying beepers around. I said, what is so urgent that you have to carry a beeper around so somebody can reach you?
It's like a cheap cellular phone, in a way. Because, true, you cannot talk on it, but you can be reached anytime you want.
I would not necessarily want to be reached while I'm in transit.
It can be a pain. It can be a major pain when beepers go off and you don't want them to.
I always thought beepers were kind of a form of enslavement. When my old job, I had to wear one. I hated the thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know why you hated it? Because you associated it with work.
Right.
But people today associate beepers with their social lives. So, you know, it could be somebody you want to talk to beeping you who can't get through to you otherwise. You ever have one of those days where you sit around the phone for a good 6 or 7 hours waiting for a certain person to call, and then you decide to go out to 7-Eleven and get something,
and that's when they call.
And you slit your wrist, and it's all over. You know, that doesn't have to happen anymore with a beeper.
Okay.
Because you just carry the beeper around with you everywhere you go, and you get beeped.
There's another thing. I always wondered, with all these beeper signals going around, don't they ever...
collide?
Cross each other? Yes, collide, cross talk, or become garbled?
Yeah, it's called a beeper collision. It can really mess things up when two beeps collide.
Mm-hmm. And also,
if you
get somebody else's signal on your beeper.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, who is this person?
Well, now, every beeper has a special code on it.
Mm-hmm. Digital code, I guess.
A special code that only allows that particular beeper to receive that particular beep.
But
you can build another beeper that has that same code and listen to somebody's beeps and watch their beeps as they go by.
Oh, this gets even better.
But well, I was in Holland.
Airwaves are wide open, they're public.
I was in Holland, which is a country over in Europe. Don't laugh, because sometimes you have to explain things to people. And not necessarily you, Matt, but, mm-hmm. You know, people listening. And it's not their fault either, because, well, I'll get into my tirade about American Impress later. But in Holland... they built up a little device. Actually, some friends of mine have built up a device that can monitor every beep that is received in Holland, the whole country. And they look at a computer screen and they see all these numbers going by, and after every number is a certain string of digits. And those are the digits that have been entered for somebody to call. And you also see alphanumeric as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as listening in and having the right equipment to do it. So... Another possible privacy invasion comes from people monitoring beeper traffic.
That's pretty wild. You can actually track somebody's location down simply
sure.
by...
On a scanner, you can listen to voice beepers.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, and I've heard some interesting things, hospital pages, things like
and
that.
And you can be sure that the National Security Agency down in, Patuxent, Maryland?
No, Fort George Meade, Maryland.
Or Fort Meade, Maryland, yeah. That's right. Patuxent River is another base.
Don't forget the National Reconnaissance Office, NRO.
Yes, the NRO. I'm sure they have methods for monitoring this stuff. I've mentioned this on the air before. Cellular phones they operate in such a way that they pick up random frequencies and transmit on whatever's available
mm-hmm.
as you dial.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a powerful enough computer, you can track down which frequencies are where, and you can process them and get the conversations, you intercept the conversations you want to intercept.
Mm-hmm.
And NSA has a Cray, so at least one.
A Cray?
At least one.
Yeah.
And one they can probably devote exclusively to that duty. And Tom Clancy's book, Clearing Present Danger, does even explain how it can be done. Whether or not they actually do it is another story, but it can be done.
Hey, did you see sneakers?
Not yet.
You see Sneakers? Yes, it's a good film. I saw it a while ago, and it's a good film. You should see it.
Mm-hmm.
All this NSA stuff is in it.
But they hire these even hackers. You know, these computer whizzes coming out of school, and naturally, this is what they come up with.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd in that would be horrible.
Dan Aykroyd is an interesting character. He plays a kind of a paranoid, you know, super paranoid person. Everything's a conspiracy.
Is that interesting or typical of Aykroyd?
He does a good job, I think. He does
his last couple movies have been horrible.
Well, what have his last couple of movies been? Driving Miss Daisy, he was in that, right?
Yeah, that was about the best thing
he did. He was
good in that.
Yeah. You're probably remembering Dr. Detroit, which is one that people would love to forget.
I forgot it completely. I didn't even see it.
Neither did I, but I've heard it was bad.
Did you see a Twin Peaks film?
That was bad.
That was not bad. That was a good film.
Really?
Yeah.
If you're a real Twin Peaks fan, you'll like it?
Well, you have to be into it, of course. But if you saw the pilot, you know, the two-hour pilot that aired a couple of years ago, and then you see this, it's weird how certain things sort of somehow make sense. You know, they kind of flow into each other, and you say, aha. And characters that didn't quite have an explanation in the series have more meaning now, and therefore have more meaning later. It's a really interesting thing that Lynch is doing, constructing this world and moving backwards at the same time.
But he's better off doing it movie by movie, as I also discovered with Star Trek, because one of the problems that Twin Peaks had while it was a series is maintaining creativity week to week.
Well, the show did suffer at some points. You know, when they got other writers and other directors in there, it did suffer. But I think they were trying to placate the masses, and I think that's why it suffered. If they had just been allowed to be crazy and nobody breathing down their neck saying you have to appeal to this particular group of people, would have had a much better quality in the thing in the first place.
But even then, the problem keeping it going week to week is for real, because that's why Billy Crystal gave up on Saturday Night Live.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because it was just, there was too much pressure constantly having to produce fresh material every single week.
What do we have to go through here at Brain Damage? We have to constantly be witty week after week. And I don't know about you, but after about 100 weeks, you know, you sort of wonder.
Right. And you wonder how witty you're actually being.
Well, you know, that doesn't really, I'm sure I continue to be witty, but it's just a question of, well, can I do another 100 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens after that, you know, then am I able to continue? And it's just, you get kind of concerned. I mean, you think about the benefits here, retirement, pension plan, all that kind of thing. Decisions, you know.
Yeah, especially when they add another zero to your salary every year.
Yeah, that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, considering they started with zero.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really care what order it's in, but it's the thought that counts. There's not much thought going around here, but anyway, tell me what you've been hearing about World Things, and I'll tell you what I've been hearing about World Things. For those that don't know, I've been wandering around in various countries, mostly Eastern Europe.
If you get your information from papers like Newsday, New York Post, and Daily News, you will know absolutely nothing about what's going on outside the region.
That's quite true.
Yes.
In fact, the
information is there, such as on the Maastricht Treaty, is there in papers like The Times. I'm actually starting to think that The Times is starting to not become a mainstream paper because there is information in there that you can use, but nobody knows about.
Yeah, well, the Maastricht Treaty is one thing. And, you know, if you read The Times, you'll understand what that is. Basically, a French referendum on the EC, European Community, which is being held tomorrow. It is the lead story every place in Europe. If you read various newspapers like The European, The Guardian, International Herald Tribune, which is an offshoot of the old New York Herald Tribune. And that sort of combines with the Washington Post and the New York Times, as well as some Herald Tribune articles, into sort of a digest. It's very small, but very, very thick, you know, condensed. No advertisements, but stories on every page. So you can find out everything that's going on there. And, of course, the war. And there is a war going on in Europe, and a rather bad one. They're only about 100 miles away from it.
The likes of which has not been seen since the last big war in Europe.
Yeah, the last big global misunderstanding. So,
and this region, and of course people forget, this region is responsible in one way or another.
Don't touch those pictures. For showing the pictures later, but you can't
starting the original war to end all wars back in 1914. It started in Sarajevo.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And yes. Now, rivalries are not quite as apparent as they used to be. Therefore, you're not going to see Russia and, let's say, Germany going to war over Yugoslavia because neither one could care.
Oh, no, no, no. Now, I'm glad you said that because...
Oh, this is good. This is interesting. So,
go through my pile of papers.
History is repeating itself.
Well, I can just, you know, too bad I don't have a computer here because I'd be able to do this without making all this noise. But that is not true, what you say. I wish it were true. But I'm trying to
this date
buy time here.
This is very significant to most people. July 28, 1914. Just remember that.
Okay. Turkey has warned the West to halt Serbian atrocities in Bosnia or face direct intervention in the Balkans by Muslim fundamentalists. Turkish Foreign Minister Hikmet Setin, who is current chairman of the Islamic Conference, told the European that his country was finding it increasingly difficult to urge restraint on other Islamic states because of the West's failure to end the persecution of Muslim communities in Bosnia. Now, here's something very interesting. In the Arab press, the war in the Balkans is being portrayed as a Christian crusade against Bosnia's 1.6 million Muslims. Press commentators in the Middle East have seized on a rocket attack on the Sarajevo headquarters of the Islamic community at the weekend to whip up opinion against Serbia in the Muslim world. The attack, virtually unreported in the West, killed five of Bosnia's leading professors of Islamic studies. And it's just a typical thing like that, that we don't hear about, but other parts of the world do, and it makes a real mess.
Starting to hear about it as much as people in Belgrade hear about it. I'm sure they didn't hear much either.
Well, now, I was in Belgrade, which is the capital of what they call now the Rump Yugoslavia, which is kind of a neat phrase. It only consists of two republics now. Serbia and Montenegro.
Yes.
And the people in Belgrade, which is really only a little more than 100 miles from Sarajevo, you would never guess there was a war happening there. You never would. It's kind of a westernized town. Got a third world element to it, you know, a lot of street vendors and things like that. Everybody's selling cigarettes. I don't know why that is, but you go down the street, and you just see all these people selling cigarettes, usually Kent cigarettes. And, you know, I don't know why you'd go to one person over another and why somebody would think that you'd go to them. And, you know, you see like a little kid selling a Kent cigarette box, and then you see an old lady selling something next to him, which is the exact same thing. And they're all selling the same thing everywhere you go.
At the same price?
Well, you know, I don't smoke, so I didn't ask. And I also don't speak the language, so I felt it was probably best not to ask. But I think so. I think they do some pretty much the same price. But you have that, and then you have sort of a Fifth Avenue kind of a crowd, you know, the chic, well-dressed people. And you have university students, too, which is a good sign. You have people that are protesting the war. You know, you can tell they're protesting the war because they just have that look. They scroll graffiti everywhere.
Yes. You may not be able to understand it, but you have a pretty good idea of what it says.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell. But, now, you know, I come back from there, and I think the people of Belgrade are definitely not the enemy here. You know, I went over there not too sure about that. But the people there, they're friendly, you know, and they really don't seem to know what's happening and not being told.
What I would find interesting question, people in Belgrade, naturally, this is a Serbian town, this is part of Serbia, and it's fairly homogeneous in terms of ethnic diversity or lack thereof. Put those same people in Bosnia, where you have non-Serbs living right next door to them, and see how they react.
I don't think it was very ethnically non-diverse. What's the word for non-diverse?
Homogeneous.
Okay, homogeneous, I say. But I don't think it really was like that in Belgrade. I saw a lot of mixture. Not a lot of mixture. Like I saw maybe three black people in all of Eastern Europe. But in Belgrade itself, There was some mixing. You know, you had your gypsies, you had your Muslims, you had your Christians.
Really? And how come they can live together in that city? They can't do it 100 miles
because
away?
Because it's a crazy situation. And the Serbs, and this shows you how crazy it is, the Serbs of Bosnia say that they're more Serbian than the Serbs of Serbia. Now, you go figure that one out, and you'll realize how crazy it all
is. It's hard, as an American, to really understand this because, let's face it, the only people who consider this their ethnic homeland are Native Americans, American Indians. Okay, everyone else is a transplant. Therefore, you know, even the wasps are transplants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so nobody has that kind of claim to their homeland that these people do. and therefore it's very difficult for us to comprehend. Mm-hmm. And the same thing that's going on in the former Soviet Union.
Well, it's a sickness, you know, it's this whole nationalism. Because, as you say, people live in peace, and people in Bosnia were living in peace for quite some time.
They could care less. I mean, the Muslim influence dates back to the Ottoman Empire, which is Turkey, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey did infiltrate as far as Hungary, and they controlled all Greece, what's now Yugoslavia, all the way as far north as the current Hungarian border.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been Muslims living in there for about 1,000 years. Okay. Yes, there were some spats, but they were rather isolated. This is 1,000 years of all the, relative peace just falling to pieces.
You know, I got stuck on a train in Serbia as I was going to Bulgaria, and the train just stopped, literally in the middle of nowhere, and everybody was just sort of sitting there. And after about half an hour of this, with no announcement or anything, people started to get out and wander around a little bit. Then another train comes in filled with more people, and that stops too, and all of a sudden there's three trains not going anywhere, and pretty obviously not going anywhere for a while. And so you had all this mixture of different people trying to figure out the situation, going and getting water from a nearby stream, and it was really amazing. Everybody just started passing water around, you know, sharing things, giving food to people. And you really needed it, too, because, you know, when you're traveling around on a train, in Eastern Europe, they don't have a cafe car. They don't have things like that. So you have to have a bottle. You have to have a bottle with you, and you run out at stations, and you fill it up. Every station has a fountain that's always going, and you run and you fill it up. Or you hand it to a total stranger, and they fill it up for you and give it to you at the window. And I got to skip this song because this is kind of distracting. There we go. Sorry about that. We'll get to that song later. But you have that kind of, community. You really do. And these are the people that are at each other's throats in another part of the region. So it's weird. You know, you like to think that it's anarchy over here, but it's there's a lot of good feeling going on.
What about this theory? The gang war mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, of course, any of you who have been to Los Angeles would probably see this. The gang wars in Los Angeles started because somebody insulted somebody else, and therefore that person was shot. And then mm-hmm. his friends wanted to get even, so they shot back, and then they wanted to get even, right, all over some ridiculous thing. So now you're at the point where you're living in this town, and a whole bunch of Serbs come in and wipe it out, destroy it, and send you on your way, if you're that lucky to come out alive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, these people destroyed my town, I'm going to get them.
Or better yet, these people did this 100 years ago, and I've got to get even.
Right.
Which is pretty much what you're seeing now, people demanding retribution for something that happened.
Europe's filled with
it,
with stuff like that. I mean,
right.
look what's... Ireland, same problem.
Uh-huh.
And to a lesser extent, even Poland. I mean, the Polish have very long memories.
What I've learned, though, wandering around as an individual, I don't believe in dragging people with me when I do the crazy things I do, but you learn that you can communicate with people on their terms without really sacrificing very many of your own moral beliefs or anything like that. A good example of this was kind of bed and breakfast place, I guess, I stayed at in Sofia, Bulgaria. Actually, no, it's called a private room. That's the deal they have, where you sign up with the tourist agency there, and they assign you to a private room of somebody that lives there. And I wound up in a private room that was run by this elderly Bulgarian woman who spoke not a single word of English, and I spoke not a single word of Bulgarian. So that didn't stop her, though, from speaking long, long soliloquies to me and saying various things. And I would just sit there nodding my head and, you know, not understanding what she was talking about, but somehow in tune with the general feeling. She wasn't yelling at me. She wasn't saying horrible things about me. She was just basically saying something, and it was, you know, supposedly, a friendly type of a thing. And I would just nod, and she seemed happy that I was nodding my head. And, you know, I didn't really understand too much, but I did get something out of it. And I think she got something out of my presence, too, although I can't imagine what.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's funny because after wandering around Sofia for a few hours and I came back that night, she and her husband were watching television, and they invited me to watch television with them, which was fine because they were watching an English program that had Bulgarian subtitles, so everybody was happy. We couldn't understand each other, but we could all understand the television, and I think that's just fine.
What was you watching?
It was some kind of mystery. Some kind of mystery thing.
Some BBC thing?
It was a BBC type of a thing. It might even show up on Mystery here, something involving, you know, a murder. Yeah. Did you get that here?
Mystery? Sure.
No, the one about the murder.
Did the guy die?
No, it was a woman that died.
Yeah, I think we got that one. That's the one where the guy died.
But we did,
and there's
right?
Another woman that killed her. It was about incest, too.
And she caught him at the end.
I'm watching a program about incest with these Bulgarian elderly people. I don't know, but you know, things like that, little moments that, you know, allow you to sort of I don't know, commune, and just passing people on the street, seeing people laughing and running around and that kind of thing, hanging out at cafes.
Well, I figured one foolproof way to meet people in a European town, just kick a soccer ball around.
Oh, I never tried that. I think you look kind of foolish though, kicking a soccer ball in a crowded street. I didn't really see anybody doing that.
Kids?
Well, they weren't kicking. They were skateboarding. They were skaters, and in fact, in Sofia.
Really? In Bulgaria? I'm sure a lot of our callers would love to hear that.
Well, now, I look for two things. Several things, actually, but these are two things I look for. I look for skaters, because, believe it or not, I think that's a sign of progress, a sign of, you know, culture that I can relate to. And I also look for graffiti. And if you saw those two things, either one of those two things, you knew that this city had hope. And that, you know, it had a little bit of dissent, it had a little bit of liveliness to it. And, you know, that's a sign that something is moving forward.
Tell me something, but with the skateboarders, did the cops bother them at all?
Not those ones. I've seen skateboarders in Montreal, and the exact same thing happens to them that happens here. You know, the police suddenly appear, and then they just sort of disappear. And that happens in most places, but
this actually
be a problem.
One thing that one of the skaters told me about on a recent show, that he was, I don't know how true this is, I'm just quoting him, that our friendly neighborhood public safety department here chained him to a chair, briefly. Now, I wonder, you know, whose word is it?
I do know they do chain people to chairs on this campus. I've heard that story many times.
Do they plug the chair in?
No, I think they stopped doing that. But, I don't know, you know, that in itself, it depends on what the situation is.
Now, I don't know whether or not this guy was acting like he was on PCP or something, and they figured they had to restrain him or what. But I'd love to find out whether, you know, how true that story is. As a matter of fact, I even gave Statesman a tip to look into it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Again, I don't know what's happened since.
Well, so that should be looked into. And, you know, we reserve judgment until we find out the facts. And people don't want to give the facts, you got to judge them based on that.
But just considering that scenario, Statesman getting the tip, and then I can imagine a reporter from Statesman actually going up to an officer saying, "Do you do this?" Naturally, he's going to say no, and then just leaving it at that.
Well,
now,
yeah,
we can go into, now, what I'm doing here is setting up your journalistic tirade.
Well, yeah, I'd like to get into my journalistic tirade, and I'm glad you did that, because I'm all ready for it. All the things we've been talking about, the war, the election in France tomorrow, and German riots, which we haven't talked about, you know, the racist riots and neo-Nazis and horrible things like that, that's on the front page of every newspaper over there, and people are talking about it, people are aware of it. And I met a friend of mine from New York in Amsterdam, and I asked him to bring over a newspaper, because I had been away for 3 weeks, and I sort of, you know, was wondering what was going on around here. And so he brought a copy of Newsday. And, my friends, on the front cover of this Newsday, the most important story in this area was Great Caesar's Ghost, They've Killed Superman.
Oh, yes.
That was the whole front page. And, well, no, they did have a couple of other items up on the top of the newspaper.
Yeah, but what are they?
Well, they put these here so that, you know, in case you don't want to just see one story, you know that there's other important news stories contained within the newspaper, and that way, you know, you get the impression that there's a lot of things going on.
But look at what's up top. Okay, the baseball story, that's sports, but
baseball owners
right.
Baseball owners want Faye to quit. That
depends
that was
on
one
how you view
story.
It.
And the other one was $108 million Prince deal is industry record. And that's the whole thing. That's the front page of this newspaper here. Absolutely nothing, even within this paper, about the things that were going on.
Is this a newspaper or is it Spin Magazine?
I don't know. But Newsday has really gone down the toilet as far as I'm concerned. You know, it used to have a decent, you know, world news coverage, but
to the other two rival papers' credit, no one else ran that Dave Killed Superman headline.
Good. Although, you know, it doesn't say much for Long Island, though.
Well,
can
I
throw this paper across the room? Would anybody mind? I just want, I've been wanting to do that. I want to throw this really hard. So this is Newsday of September 4th being flung violently across the room.
Ow!
And hitting somebody in the process.
The editor of Newsday.
You want to see some pictures?
Yes,
definitely.
All right, that's what we're all here for, is to see some pictures. Okay. Now, somehow the photo place in Amsterdam managed to mix up the pictures. You know, you're supposed to get the pictures back in the same order you took them, but this didn't quite happen here. I don't know why this is. So we're gonna hop all over the place here. This is a picture. Well, you see, that looks like a German phone booth. So that's somewhere in Germany. You know, I think this is Munich. Yeah, looks like Munich to you. Yeah, there's another one of you. Okay, now we're in Prague. Or is that Budapest? You know, I think this is Budapest. Yeah, this is Budapest. This is where I almost got arrested for not paying the ticket. Nice blue train there.
No graffiti.
No graffiti in Budapest. Well, at least not in that section of Budapest. And here
is... Was this Buda or Pest?
Well, no. Oh, that's very good point there. Pest is a commercial district. Buda is a historic district. And they're separated by the Danube River, which really is blue. Yeah, it's really blue. That's a crowded street in Budapest, actually, Pest. And here's a payphone in Budapest. I don't know. You know, a lot of people are wearing Megadeth T-shirts and things like that.
If you thought payphones in New York City looked decrepit, this one looks bad.
That's a rotary. They're all rotary. Even if they have buttons, they aren't emitting tones. So you can't. You know, I'm going to turn this guy off because he's screaming too much.
You thought those Intellicall things, those off-brand telephones you see in stationery stores, you think they're bad? This thing looks really bad.
Oh,
no wonder
nothing.
You were having trouble.
I didn't even try using that kind
this
of
thing. It looks like a real clunker.
Here's two policemen crossing the street in Budapest.
Actually, the colors of uniforms and everything like that, if it wasn't a Trabant sitting right in front of you and a couple of other Soviet-built cars, these guys look like New York guys in the back.
Yeah, they do. Regular trains. You have first and second class, and everybody, of course, rides second class. And there are these compartments where you sort of share living space with five other people, and you get to sort of know people even though they don't speak your language many times. And it's you can close the door, and it's sort of like a little room.
That's what makes your railing so popular.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it does. And people lean out the windows and talk to the people on the platform, and it's a very social event there. This guy's urinating in the street, except... it's in Bratislava. Well, yeah, it is rather powerful. In fact, it caused a flood there. Actually, I guess I should explain for the benefit of people that maybe can't see these pictures that...
That's not urine.
No,
a water cannon.
It was a water cannon. Yes, that's true. It was just lined up in such a perfect way that I had to not let that opportunity go by.
They should use him next time as a protest march.
Yeah. Now, this part of Czechoslovakia is going to be known as Slovakia.
I got a very good question. What is the Czech part supposed to be called? Czechia or something like that?
Well, that is a very good question. I've been asking that question, and nobody seems to have an answer. Even over there, they don't know. You know, I imagine it's going to wind up being called something like the Czech Republic or something like that. But, there's no... You can't just call it Czecho or anything like that.
Huh.
Well, Czecho would be a good name for a country. I don't know how this got in here. This isn't even in Europe. It's a 2600 meeting. this is... more of Bratislava. Or is that Prague? You know, that's Prague. Yeah, that's Prague. How do you know what Prague looks like? You've been to Prague? Really? Those are soldiers marching in Prague.
That's really weird. Here we go. Here, that's one very interesting thing I see in this little picture from Prague.
Yeah.
The parking sign,
uh-huh.
And it says, réservé, which is French for reserved. Why did they use put French in there and not Czech?
Well, how do you know it's not the Czech word for reserve, too?
Because where the accents are.
Well, let me see that picture again.
French embassy. It's
question being raised by the picture here.
But the translation is French.
Well, you know, I guess some words might coincide. For instance, police. You know what the police are called where is it? I'm trying to think. Maybe it's Holland.
Efficient? No.
Polity.
Polity?
Yeah, they're called polity. I think it's in Holland they call that. Yeah.
Polity, by the way, is the student government here at Stony Brook.
Well, put the student government in quotes, but yes, that's what they're called here in the
student self-serving organization.
It makes you wonder because you know polity can become the police over in Holland. Maybe, you know, given some bizarreness, they become the police here and. Who knows what would be...
Well, if I were a burglar and Polity became the police here, I'd be very happy.
These are castles in Czechoslovakia and Prague.
Is that the St. Venus Church?
Is it dance?
That's a cathedral.
We know it's the St. Venus dance, isn't it?
I think it's St. George or something like that, but it's very close to where Franz Kafka used to live.
Yeah, the Castle District.
The Castle District, yes. Yeah. You've done your share of walking around Prague, I guess.
Whatever it is, it dates back to 1614.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it does go way back.
Yeah.
Now, here's the Prague Metro. As you can see, it's very clean and it's very efficient. They have a little clock at the end of the station to tell you when the next train will be there and all kinds of things that we don't have here. More payphones, more Czechoslovakia. Well, why are you laughing?
Just to give you an idea.
They look like toilets, yes. They do look like toilets, so I'll give you that, but they are payphones. And, you know, I think... I'm not sure if those are in Bratislava or Prague. I believe those are in Prague. Another New York picture there. I don't know why all these New York pictures are here.
No, they do look like urinals.
Yeah.
And not only that, they look like they've been used as such.
Okay, here we are back in Germany. I think this is Munich again. And... Okay, this is interesting. This was taken from a train. And a United Nations freight train was going by. And as you can see... It's loaded up with UN trucks and jeeps and things like that. And I probably wasn't supposed to take that picture, but I did it anyway.
And, Bosnia bound.
Probably Bosnia bound, yes. Where else would that be?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first roll of pictures here.
But how
many?
No, this is through Regensburg, which is... where is Regensburg? In the south? Bavaria?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Quite possible.
The only reason I remember Regensburg is it was a very primary target during World War II.
Well, I was on my way to Prague.
A very big aircraft factory there.
From Stuttgart.
Mm-hmm. Which is known for many things.
Yeah.
Porsches. No.
The Romanian pictures are the most interesting. Maybe I'll get to those a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
What? You want to get to them now? I don't know where they are. They could be here anywhere.
No. Oh, you said the Romanian. I'm sorry.
Romania.
Okay. This... You know, I don't know where this is. It's just a street.
Oops.
Well, they're
oh, did you take a picture of any of
graffiti there.
Ceausescu's housing projects?
Yes. I this is Belgrade.
The ones that were never built, never completed.
Belgrade shopping district there. But that's a... and this is a Yugoslavian...
With a UPC code.
A Yugoslavian payphone, a Yugoslavian department store.
And one of the few operating Yugos in existence.
A Yugoslavian street. Very colorful, you know. You see this bustling. And I got very, very lost in Belgrade. I'm talking about walking around for 3 hours looking for where I was staying after I already knew where it was. And just going around in circles.
Seems everything in the area is brightly colored. They've got
Yeah, it's a very brightly colored city. And here's...
Easier to find stuff when it gets bombed, I guess.
Uh-huh. And that's Budapest. That is the oldest subway line. It's called the M1 subway line, the oldest one in Europe.
Probably dates back to the turn of the century.
1800s.
Wow.
Burger King.
Uh-huh. That was Burger King's everywhere. And
it doesn't look any worse than some of the subways I've seen in Brooklyn.
No, it's actually quite... and there's the Statue of Liberty in Buda.
Actually, it looks like the Lexington Avenue subway station.
And here's another Budapest payphone. A car with graffiti on it.
Not really graffiti.
Anyway, that's not a
every inch.
Budapest. That's not Budapest. That's a U2 concert. Sorry.
All right. This is another Budapest payphone with its insides ripped out for some reason.
Yes, and it is a Trabant. The U2 finally decide what to do with those cars. What a Trabant is, it's an East German conveyance. I wouldn't even call it a car.
I know people that have bought those cars.
Yeah, with a motor scooter engine in it. Puts out probably more dirty emissions than 1,000 new cars. But these things may have fiberglass, so these things don't deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are being used as planters, as light fixtures for the U2 concerts, and what have you. But they're an ongoing joke now that the East has opened up and you can actually get a Volkswagen.
This is a bus. Now, I don't ordinarily take pictures of buses, but I did this in Budapest because Hungary is known for building buses. I bet you didn't know that. And also what I found out later in an unfortunate incident was that the word bus in Hungarian means something very obscene. Now, you wouldn't think that if you go around building something that's pronounced in so many places, you know, that way, that you'd make an obscenity mean that.
What in particular can you be
descriptive
without being...
Well, I really would rather not, but just imagine the most horrible obscenity you can, and it's probably something along those lines.
Is it like go bus yourself or something like that?
Well, basically things like that, but you wouldn't use it in that context.
Oh.
It is interesting, though, how always the worst obscenity winds up meaning something that isn't supposed to be obscene at all. More Budapest payphones. The reason I took so many pictures of Budapest payphones is because there's so many different kinds. There's the red one, the blue one, and the colors mean something. Certain phones can do certain things. And the yellow ones, too. They got yellow ones as well. The yellow
some
ones
European countries have phones that can call long distance exclusively. That's all they're for, and the others are local or something like that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what they are. Now, for some reason, here we are back in Bratislava. I don't know why. And here we are back in Budapest. That's the nature.
Sit down and put all these in order.
Well, it's going to take some time because I'll have to look through the negatives to figure. You take a picture of a monument or something like that, and you might not remember where it is.
Right.
But you got to look at the negatives and see what order it was in.
Oh, and in this picture, you actually see some trams. Can you go into detail with that story? Because when you left the message... your receiver was crapping out on you, and some very good details of the story were lost.
Well, basically, it was a very, very simple misunderstanding that I seem to always get involved in. In European cities, you need a ticket to be on certain things, but you can very often get away with not having a ticket. And you're supposed to cancel it yourself. You get on a tram or a train or a bus or whatever, and you go up to a little machine and you stamp it. And getting the ticket, though, is difficult because you have to get it either from a newsstand, and if there's no newsstand around, you'll have some difficulty, or you get it from a machine. Now, the machines are crazy because I don't know what the exact currency is called, but the price of the ticket was 18. Let's say it's 18 cents. It was something else, but 18 cents.
I think it's called a forint or something like that.
18 forints, then. Now, they don't have 18 forint pieces. They have 20s. If you put in a 20, what do you think happens?
Naturally, you should get two back.
Well, you should get your ticket, and you should get two of them back, right? Mm. Two little coins back. I would have settled for getting a ticket and not getting any of them back, but that's not what happens. If you put in a 20, the little digital number on the machine changes from 18 to 16. They give you 18 and then two credits for the next one. And until you put in enough to make that go down to zero, you won't get any tickets. You see, that's how it works. And I came across British tourists and tourists from all over the world that were dumbfounded by this machine, trying to figure out how to make it give out a single ticket when you didn't have the exact change. And it was impossible. You could not do it. So I was in a situation where, you know, I had a ticket for a tram, and I was transferring to a train. And ordinarily, you can use the same ticket for about 2 or 3 hours, but not in Budapest. Budapest is different. Every time you switch to a different train, you have to get a different ticket. And so even though I had this this ticket in my hand, it wasn't the right one. And so I was accosted by this person as I was walking onto a platform, not even onto the train, but onto a platform of the metro. And he had an armband on. He was a really big person, too, really large. And he said something to me in Hungarian, and I guess I said what I shouldn't have said, which was no thanks, you know, thinking that he was trying to sell me something. And that didn't sit too well with him. He was asking me if I had a ticket. And, of course, I showed the ticket that I had, and he shook his head and said, no, no, and said, you know, I have to now pay all this money, which was the equivalent of about 8 or 10 U.S. dollars. And, of course, I didn't have all that because I hadn't really changed that much money yet. I had about maybe five U.S. dollars on me. And so I figured this is, you know, going to lead to me being, you know, prosecuted or sent to jail or something like that. And I said, okay, well, let's make a good story to tell on the radio if I ever get back. Mm-hmm. So he was leading me up the escalator. And as he was leading me up the escalator, I like to call this the international sign of corruption, I could see his hand sort of moving closer to where I was holding what I did have, you know, in my other hand. I just sort of gave it to him. And I guess what I did was I bribed him not to take it any further, because he then just went and got me a ticket and sent me on my way. And that was it.
Now, did you actually give him Hungarian or U.S.
currency? No, Hungarian money.
Okay, because I would figure that, at least in that part of Europe, if you flashed U.S. currency,
right,
he'd be really
or
happy.
Western currency. I had Austrian shillings, and I didn't tell him about that because there would have been no end what his demands would be then.
Yeah.
But this way, you know, I learned a lesson of some sort and went on my way. That was the only time I was ever really stopped. And this is Berlin. Yes, Alexanderplatz in East Berlin, which is much more colorful than when I was there 3 years ago. It was kind of a black and white city, and now it's a color city. It's got all these Sony signs now. And if you're in Europe, you notice how people park. They park completely differently. They park, you know, facing different directions on the street, and they even park head first on a street if there's room to do that, and everybody else is parallel parking. They park on the sidewalk. Nobody really seems to care that much. Okay, this is Romania. I found Romania. Bucharest, one of the scariest cities I've ever seen in my life. The rebuilding of the library that burned during the revolution a couple of years ago. Here's me standing in front of the place where Nicolae Ceaușescu gave his last speech. Yeah. Now, I'm going to get to the really scary pictures in a minute. This is a monument to some people that died in the revolution. It's kind of in the middle of the street there.
With the Marlboro sign?
Yeah, the Marlboro sign isn't part of it, but it's sort of in the background. And here we just have
This death was sponsored by
an apartment building. Nothing really.
Actually, when you think about it, that's rather appropriate.
Now, the Romanians have an election coming up in about 7 days. And it's going to determine the future of their country. This is the headquarters for the National Salvation Front, which currently runs the country.
Which is made up primarily of ex-communists.
Yes. I felt kind of, scared taking that picture, but I did it anyway. Here's a picture of one of those large streets with the metro. Ceaușescu loved large streets like the Champs-Élysées. And here's one of his many statues that were built. And the Bucharest Metro. Yes. Showing pictures here. This is a payphone in Brazil. I don't know how I got this. I think somebody gave it to me. I was not in Brazil, so I have no idea. Okay, this is the scary part, and people at home listening, listen up now, because this is. I hope everybody has gotten the little device so that you can see these pictures too. If not, I can't imagine what you're doing listening to this. But this picture here is Nicolae Ceaușescu's House of the People.
Okay.
The unfinished building that was supposed to house every member of the government in Bucharest. Most huge building, lavishly architectured and built and all that kind of thing. And large and unfinished and empty.
Draw some kind of parallel to a building that's well known to people here locally.
Edgewood. The Edgewood Mental Hospital. Which for years was abandoned on Comac Road in Comac. And you walk down this road.
And had its roof missing, right?
Well, the roof came later, yeah. But you'd be walking down this road or driving down this road, and all of a sudden you were aware of this huge, dark building just sort of staring at you in the night, assuming it's night, that is. This building is the same. There are no lights anywhere around it except it's brand new. And it's so incredibly large. To give you an idea.
Will it ever be used, or are they just going
to
let...
Right now they just have people guarding it. There's a dried-out, parched park surrounding it. Not maintained at all, dying trees and dead grass, and buildings just go on and on for miles, where people were supposed to live who worked in the government, You can see this is a...
Actually, these buildings
incredibly huge
are not
building.
That bad looking. I mean, they are dull. They're rather dull and they're rather imposing, but...
They're very lavish, yes.
They're in they're
no
very
expense
good shape.
Was spared on building those buildings. No expense at all. Whereas the Romanian people were starved for years so that they could afford things like this.
Oh, it's going to be kind of like Versailles?
Closer view of those buildings, of one of those buildings. And there's kind of a side view of it. You can see the front and the side at the same time.
Actually, the architecture, with the exception that the shape of the building is like the Edgewood Mental Hospital,
it's
is
very much like
not too much different from our own capital.
Uh-huh. Well, he looked at a lot of, you know, a lot of capitals and drew inspiration from that, including North Korean capital.
Oh,
here's, here's an idea of how far it stretched for. Hmm? Yeah, that's something. Miles and miles.
I think there was... Did you name one of the streets Triumph of Socialism Street or something like that? Yeah.
Well, a lot of streets are named after dates. Certain things happen on days and, you know, October 22nd Boulevard. You get used to it after a while.
What was that, the day he lost his virginity or something?
I don't know. But that certainly wouldn't be a happy day for Romania. And the final two pictures here. Again, of,
unfortunately, I don't think anybody in Romania does landscaping.
Ah, there's plenty of landscape to be done.
Land to be steep.
Yeah, so that's some of it. That's some of the pictures here. You know, we've had people on the phone now for over an hour. I've been waiting patiently to get on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And not to show disrespect to them or anything like that. We're, you know, here showing pictures and talking about various things. We'll get to those pictures later. I just wanted to do one more thing before we went to some phone calls. Completely unrelated. And that concerns a little kind of scandal. Well, not really scandal, but...
scandalous.
It's, yeah, it's scandalous. Now, you're all familiar with the song Lola, right, by the Kinks?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been listening to the classic rock stations a lot since I got back, only because you can't do that over there. You know, I just wanted to sort of update my head and get all the songs back in there.
But what do you listen to over there?
Not much of anything, really. There's, it's pretty boring. You know, it is. It's and sparse too. There's maybe five stations in the whole dial.
Yeah, unlike the United States, a lot of the radio, a lot of the airwaves are controlled by the local governments, and therefore you have a very limited choice. England had a little bit of a problem where what they would do. As a matter of fact, what happened here a few years back is that they would put radio transmitters on boats in international waters and transmit, rock and roll stations
right. That
way. And matter of fact, somebody actually tried it back in 1983 or so, doing the same thing for
in
New York.
Sarah. Off
yes,
Sarah.
Radio New York International, as I remember.
Yeah. And they still are on the air on the shortwave on a station somewhere down south. They do a program now. Yeah. And so does Gene Scott on the same station.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, that's the kind of station it is. Anyway, this song Lola, I've heard a couple of times. And I actually heard it a couple of months ago, too, and it just sort of stuck with me because, you know, I was listening to it, and we all know how the song begins, right? I met her in a club down in old Soho where you drink champagne and it tastes just like cherry cola.
C-O-L-A cola.
Yeah, except I seem to remember that it said Coca-Cola, not cherry cola. Now, which is it?
I don't know. I think there's one version, the live version. Matter of fact, do we have... the Kinks live album from, I think, 78 or so?
No, this is
because they might, on that live version, they might say Coca-Cola.
Uh-huh. Listen to the original, the opening of the original song in 1967. That's those first two lines. Now... That was Coca-Cola in my book. Now, every single time I hear this on the radio now, I hear cherry cola. So I'm wondering, what has happened? Has Coca-Cola gotten mad and somehow managed to change this song and take that word out and change it to cherry? I mean, they can do things
like
that.
You know what it is?
What's going on here?
I think in order for it to be played on the BBC, since the BBC does not take commercials and does not take commercial references, they had to alter it. This happened with Tina Turner. In the early 1980s with Private Dancer,
Okay, she made a comment like, American Express will do nicely, thank you, and the BBC would not run the video.
Well, I mean, we don't have BBC affiliates in this country, do we?
But the Kinks are from England.
Well, that may be true, but how come we're not playing that version of the song anymore?
I guess because they must be playing the single, in which case the single is probably altered to accommodate the BBC.
I'm just jumping
to conclusions here, but unfortunately Ray Davies cannot be reached at this moment, and he can't explain. Maybe we can. I was assuming that we could not get hold of his number and also his location. I don't know if he's here or in London or where.
Well, I don't know, but wherever he is, I hope he's in the best of health.
Yes, I hope somebody with a decent sense of journalism will ask that question of him someday.
I hope so, too. Okay. I want to read a very quick story, and then we'll go right to the phone, 632-6901. I guess I don't have to give out that number since they've been ringing since we started the program.
Oh, I've gone through entire shows without ever having to give out the number.
Well,
that's not fair to
new callers. You know, there's new callers out there that haven't called the show yet. So we like to hear the same voices, but, you know, in the interest of fairness, let's keep calls to one per night, one per week, I guess, if you're
they've
one person.
They've been pretty good with that.
Okay. All right. That way we don't hear the same people over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this story came from, I think, the European, which is a newspaper that shows up throughout Europe, a nice color newspaper.
It's like USA Today.
It looks like USA, but it doesn't read like USA Today because the stories are longer than a paragraph and a half, you know, which...
they have funny graphics?
...fan of American media. No, they don't have any graphics like that. No.
No pie charts?
The story, this is a front page story, though. It's called Dogs for Dinner Shock the Swiss. Huh?
Dogs for dinner?
Yeah.
As in hot dogs or as in real dogs?
Well, listen, the usually well-ordered and hygienic Swiss have been shaken by revelations that dogs and cats form a regular part of the diet of some of their compatriots. The practice, said to be widespread, is centered around the eastern cantons of St. Gallen, Appenzell, and Thurgovie, but some believe it could be prevalent throughout the French-speaking regions. According to Inspector Jean Clermont of the Fribourg Society for the Prevention of Animals, the Protection of Animals, Freudian slip there, these curious culinary preferences began in the 1950s during a particularly hard winter when people turned to dog meat in desperation. They developed a taste for the meat and have now diversified to other pets.
Woof.
He says it has not died out. There are still lots of people who eat dogs and cats as well. The eating of dogs and cats is not against the law, but trading in the animals is forbidden. Nevertheless, farmers at Lagnau in the Emmental region are known to supply the animals. Clermont says you cannot go to a normal butcher's, but there are private people, often peasant farmers, who will gladly do the butchering for you.
I have a question, though. Do different breeds taste different?
Of course. Oh, a poodle won't taste the same as a Great Dane, no way.
So what breed of dog do they consider ideal?
Actually there is, they don't give specific breeds, but they do give some dishes here. I don't know, I guess you'd have to inquire further to know that. Here we go. The Cantons of Appenzell is well known for its sheepdog breed, which is black and white and slightly smaller than the St. Bernard. It is this unfortunate animal which is top of the menu for the locals.
Provide a lot of meat, I would assume.
The revelations first emerged in a program on RTL, the Swiss-German-language television channel. It had been alerted by a woman disgusted by the culinary habits of her neighbors. Thanks to the uproar, locals may now be deprived of favorite delicacies such as canine salami, feline goulash, and lightly smoked dog.
Actually, I have to make one comment here. Certain restaurants in certain parts of New York City, we've probably been sampling it all along.
Well, that's quite true, as well as other beasts that maybe we don't want to be sampling. But we don't need to get into that right now. The Paris-based animal rights group, the Brigitte Bardot Foundation, has vowed to stamp out this worse than beastly practice. We are gathering information right now, a spokesman told the European. The foundation will be intervening.
They use the word beastly?
Of course.
That's kind of funny.
They're Paris-based. They can use words like that.
Yes.
All right, that's...
Oh, another thing.
Yes.
In Korea, same situation. During the Korean War, naturally, there was a shortage of virtually everything.
Mm-hmm.
So dogs wound up on the menu, too. And again, people developed a taste for them. During the 88 Olympics, the South Korean government banned the trade of, you know, dogs for public for consumption,
mm-hmm.
just so they wouldn't disgust the visitors. Naturally, after the Olympics ended, they didn't care.
Uh-huh.
But the same thing happened in that times were hard. There was nothing else out there, so you ate the dog.
Well, you know, so I can certainly see objections to eating dogs because, you know, dogs are our friends and that kind of thing. But there's something I don't understand. Now, people readily eat, you know, beef, which is meat from a cow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you offer them horse meat, they become all disgusted by that because you don't eat horses. But to me, I mean, I've never had a friend in either a cow or a horse. You know, they both seem kind of indifferent, and I'm pretty much indifferent to them. Mm-hmm. Horses can run, and you can ride them. You can't really ride a cow, but cows are good to sort of meditate with and things like that, and you can tip them occasionally. And, you know, that kind of, they all have their purposes, but, you know, I don't think a horse to a cow is what a dog is to a horse or a cow. You know, it's a dog is much more on your level. Yes. You know, you can relate to a dog.
Yes, but on a strictly culinary standpoint, I don't know why. Again, if you're desperate enough, you'll eat anything. But I don't know why dogs would necessarily be good to eat because of the how active they are and everything like that. I would think the meat would be very tough.
Well, some people like tough meat, but you can always put tenderizer on it. You know.
Yeah, and same thing with horses.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, horses are a lot more useful to, a farmer as something that can pull a plow than as food.
People eat rattlesnake, you know, and who would ever think they'd eat something like that? That's
obviously, you know, somebody developed a taste for it. Or but, fish. Again, if you're out in the prairie, it's all there is.
Did you ever really think of fish? You know, you got fish swimming around, and people eat that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or lobsters. They look like giant insects.
Yes.
You know? What's that?
Japanese horse.
Do they really?
It's become a replacement for beef.
Wow.
Beef is so expensive.
That's interesting. Wouldn't horses be more expensive? Because horses would probably be rarer.
No. Matter of fact, a lady I know who used to give autistic people rides on horses,
mm-hmm.
she had to sell a horse because it was, you know, lame or something. And it was useless. It was bought up by a Japanese.
Boy, that's something.
Interesting. But
Japanese horse market.
And the natural conclusion of that thing is maybe if they let down some of their trade barriers, beef wouldn't be so expensive.
Well, that's an interesting topic for debate this week with David Brinkley. But for right now, let's go to the phones and see who's out there.
Okay.
Kevin is leaving. He's afraid of the phones.
Yeah.
So we'll give you a chance to evacuate, and then we'll go to the phones.
Okay. Yeah. Don't forget your cross and garlic.
All right, he's out. So let's see who's there. Good morning.
Yes, this is Mr. Quayle.
Boy, you're first tonight.
Boy, the luck we run into.
You're only going to have one person hosting the show next week, right?
Well, you know, we don't know exactly how things are going
to
go. We never announce our plans.
To each other.
What's that?
When you have two people hosting the show, you talk to each other and you waste an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Whose
well,
time is it, ours or yours?
What?
Whose time is it, ours or yours?
It's actually your time.
Good. Then it's ours to waste.
Yeah, I feel like I've wasted a lot of it. But I don't want to waste any more of either your time or mine, so do you have anything to say?
What are your guys' positions on abortion?
Don't ask about abortion. I will not talk about abortion tonight.
Well,
I mean, come on already.
Choose your own position.
Yeah,
that makes us, I guess that makes us pro-choice.
How about this? Okay, look, this is something we can argue about with Mr. Quayle. At least I can argue about with Mr. Quayle. Did you hear about that police demonstration in New York City a couple of days ago?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
I think I hate Dinkins. He goes to visit the guy, the Puerto Rican who was shot by the police. He doesn't really care about the police, and he immediately criticizes the situation where the evidence was overwhelmingly in support of the police.
Now, wait a minute. First of all, I don't know who you're referring to when you say he visited Puerto Rico. I know he visited the family of someone who was killed by the police in Washington Heights. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay, now, what's wrong with visiting the family of someone who was killed by the police? Is that a crime? Does that show that you don't care about the police, that you're an anarchist or something?
Criticize the police, and this guy was like a criminal. He
well, now, you look at what happened a couple of days ago, and for those that don't know about this, let me just read the first two paragraphs of Newsday's story on it. 10,000 off-duty police officers laid siege to City Hall the other day, chanting, "Dinkins must go," and shutting down the Brooklyn Bridge in an explosion of bitter rage against the mayor. About 300 on-duty police officers assigned to keep order appeared to stand idly by as thousands of colleagues, all but a handful white, many of them armed and some drinking beer, surged past barricades onto the steps of City Hall where protesters are forbidden. Thousands more filled the parking lot, jumping on cars and pumping their fists in the air. No one was arrested during the three-hour protest.
Would the cops arrest their own?
That's, you know, to me, that smacks of terrorism. You got these people with guns running around, laying siege to the city, and nobody trying to stop them. And carrying signs saying things like, dump the washroom attendant, Dinkins sucks, with drawings of a face with an afro hairstyle and large lips. You know, that kind of thing is disgusting. And, yeah, that's why police deserve to be criticized.
Speaking of guns.
And I'm glad Dinkins has the guts to do it.
What do you think about the Brady Bill, where you have to wait 7 days to buy a gun?
It's not long enough in my book. I mean, all right, let me tell you something that I learned when I was over in Amsterdam. All right, you have people dealing drugs openly throughout the place. You know, people ask if you want to buy hash, ask you if you want to buy heroin. Whatever you want to buy, you can buy. Now, you know, if you want to mess up your life with drugs, you can do it there, and the police pretty much turn a blind eye because it's not that big a deal to them or to society at large. So you can do that. You can also do other things like engage in prostitution and other things that might be considered very illegal here. The difference is you can walk down the street where drug dealers are and not feel like your life is in danger. The reason for that is that while they may not care all that much about drugs and alcohol and what have you, and they don't restrict it as much and they don't try to hide it as much, they do care a lot about gun control, and they do not allow people to have guns. The result being not a single cop has been killed in Amsterdam in recent memory, and people can walk the streets day or night without fear. That is the difference.
I'll give you one example of how this bill would be bad. Let's say a lady is being stalked by someone who's a crazy man, like Rebecca Schaefer, and she knew about this, and she wanted to protect herself. She goes into a gun shop, and she says, I need to buy a gun to protect myself. And the guy says, no, I'm sorry. Thanks to President Clinton's new law, you have to wait 7 days to buy a gun. She says, well, I need to protect myself. So she goes home without a gun. The stalker enters her house, rapes her, and she has no... Well, he enters the house, and she has no way of defending herself except for, like, she has maybe a baseball bat.
All right.
When she swings that, the guy will take it, and if she had a gun, then would have killed him, she wouldn't have gotten raped.
What you're saying, then, is that this country is beyond help, that we can't go back, we can't fix the situation, and the only way we can even the score is to give everybody guns, but we can't possibly fix what's happened because it's gotten out of hand. Is that what you're saying?
I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment. Everybody should have the
right. That's got nothing to do with the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment doesn't have anything to do with people walking around with guns, shooting people or just terrorizing people. That's not what the Second Amendment was about.
Uh-huh.
The Second Amendment was about protecting the country against British troops and people that wanted to take away their basic rights. You know, basic rights of free representation and that kind of thing. I don't see that happening now, not on a massive scale anyway.
Well, I have a top,
there's a new
top
country
10 reasons
back then.
Why you should vote for George Bush. And I'll hurry this up.
All right, hurry it up.
Okay, number 10, he is winning the war on drugs. Number 9, he has true conservative and family values. Number 8,
please.
We'll put jobs first instead of the spotted owl.
Let's fight the spotted owl. Who is he running against, Clinton or the spotted owl?
Environmental extremists. Number 7.
Please.
Has a vice president who is honest, smart, qualified, experienced, and is not a liberal environmental extremist drug user like Al Gore. Number 6. Has foreign policy experience and can use that in case of threats in the Middle East. Number 5. Has never cheated on wife, used drugs, or dodged a draft. Number 4. Will do everything in his power to protect the lives of unborn children. Number 3, will cut government spending. Number 2, will not raise taxes. And the number 1 reason you should vote for George Bush is you can trust George Bush.
Vote
Republican.
That's funny.
92, and quail for president in 1996.
Yeah. That was almost as funny as David Letterman, wasn't it, with his top 10?
Yes.
The first one was the funniest. I think he's having trouble getting through these now, too. I sense that he's not able to keep a straight face while giving this line to us. But I don't know. I think unless Bush comes up with a major scandal in the next couple of weeks, he's out of here. Out of here. Pension City, it's all over.
I'd hate to say this, but this does have some parallel with 1948, which is why I'm holding back judgment.
Uh-huh.
1948, of course, everybody thought Truman was pretty much through and Dewey was in, but it didn't happen.
Was he behind by this much?
He was behind all the way up till Election Day.
Well, what happened?
So obviously, somebody came out of the woodwork and voted him in because, well, you've seen the picture, the famous picture where Truman is holding up a copy of the Chicago Tribune that says Dewey defeats Truman.
Yep.
You know what I did?
Yeah, I saw Dewey holding up that.
The university here has, naturally, the Chicago Tribune on microfilm going back to, what, turn of the century.
Uh-huh.
So I looked it up on microfilm that particular day, day after the election in 1948. As a face-saving measure, what they did, they did not put the Dewey defeats Truman thing in there.
They put a knot after it, right?
They put the later edition of the paper, and one that came out in the the final or the afternoon edition.
What did it say, whoops?
No, it says they put a headline, confesses double murder, you know, some other totally unrelated thing, and then as a sub-headline, Truman victory celebration.
Uh-huh. So they got a different edition in there.
Yes. Every other paper in the country puts the true, naturally, Truman elected or whatever as first, except Chicago Tribune.
Uh-huh. That's
pretty
funny.
They put a murder case up first, no, and then Truman.
Was the Chicago Tribune the only newspaper that made that mistake? Because that was the only one I ever
saw. That's the one that Truman showed everybody. I'm sure the mistake was made by other people.
Uh-huh. Well, that's... mistakes are made a lot these days in... They reported that the truck driver in the Los Angeles riots was killed on TV. I saw that happen. They reported that James Brady was killed in the assassination attempt.
Even sports is bad. I'm not going to go in too deep on this.
And the chemical weapons in Israel, which never happened. They reported, I remember, NBC News has confirmed that chemical weapons have been used in Tel Aviv. And that was just last year.
Yeah, it didn't happen. It was just an explosive warhead.
Incredible.
Did enough damage, but obviously nobody got gassed.
Right.
But there's... It's a case of journalists not doing proper research. Example of, you know, leaving out major details on a recent World Series.
And racing to beat the competition.
Yes, and not only this one. There was an instance where the Albertville Olympics, again going into sports, but also history, because the person that they had sing the French national anthem, La Marseillaise, was a little girl about 10 years old. And she was escorted to where she was supposed to stand by Mitterrand. And this whole fanfare revolves around her. Now, the researchers totally and completely missed the point of why the French chose a little girl to sing the national anthem. Because back in the days, if you remember the logo for the Les Miserables, the musical, is a little girl carrying a torch, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm sick of that picture.
Yes, but around that time, also during the Franco-Prussian War, during the siege of Paris, there was this little girl carrying a torch and rallying the troops. And the little girl has a very interesting conclusion to it because it was the pattern for the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? Beautiful story. Could have really gotten...
Would
have been a beautiful story to tell. The researchers missed it.
Well, the
completely.
French didn't give out a press release about it now, did they? You need
they probably
a press release.
Assumed we knew.
If you want to get a story out, you got to send out a press release about
yes,
it.
Yes, they probably assumed we knew. They probably assumed that somebody around there went to college for history and
a little girl out with a fire in her hands and expect the American public to understand that has something to do with their history. It's just,
yes,
you got to have a press release. I tell these people that all the time. Do they listen? Oh no. All right, let's go back to the phones. Good morning. Anybody there? Wake up. I don't think there's anybody here. Well, I'll go to the next one. Good morning.
Hello, this is Geraldine Ferraro, the Democratic senatorial candidate.
Hi, Brian.
Deepest condolences.
Excuse me?
My deepest condolences, and I guess Matt knows you better than anybody else because he called you by your nickname.
What do you mean, deepest condolences?
Well, you lost the election.
Excuse me?
You lost the election.
Good evening. The best here.
Uh-huh.
Well, you may lose the election.
yeah, well, I imagine that certain people don't read the newspapers. Good morning.
What's up?
well, apart from everything we've been talking about for the last hour and a half, not much. How about you?
I'm listening to you guys. So how was your trip to Europe?
Going to show my pictures again?
No.
And then don't ask me a question like that. It was okay. It was good. It was enlightening, educational, and terrifying at the same time. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but I'm glad I did it. How's that?
One thing I failed to mention.
I'd like to make a comment about the first caller about the guns.
All right, go ahead.
Well, the guy said it wouldn't be good if the people couldn't get the guns before the 70s. Wouldn't it be kind of scary if, like, someone needs a gun in 7 days, before, like, 7 days? You know what I mean?
Wait, if somebody needs a gun before 7 days, why would you need a gun before 7 days? Explain that.
The idea is to eliminate the need.
Like, would you need a gun in seven days?
Yeah, give me an example.
Like, you're going to have some guys, like, one eye walk into the store, I need a gun, and the seven-day law.
Uh-huh.
And the guy's like, no, I need a gun now. I mean, isn't it the reason why they made the law for people like that, so they can't get guns?
Well, yeah, of course. But the thing is, I don't think 7 days. I mean, that one-eyed guy is probably going to come back in 7 days and still want the gun.
Yes, and not only that. Okay, I can see the Brady Bill is probably, you know, even if you're an NRA member, is probably not beyond reason, because if you need a gun, let's say if you're hunting or doing something like that, you can afford to wait 7 days. It's no big deal. You just plan your trip a little later. But if you needed to hold up a 7-Eleven, then naturally you're going to need it sooner. And that's the psychology of it. Obviously, you have to be more deliberate about buying a gun. Maybe the people who will use it for stuff like that will be less likely to.
But you see, the only thing that does is that just solves the unplanned crimes, the premeditated ones. Oh, fine, we'll wait 7 days because we're going to kill these people. We can make appointments to do it.
The premeditated crimes you're not going to do anything about anyway. Remember the guy who shot Pope John Paul, and you also know Italy's tough gun control laws. He managed to get a gun.
Well, he was sent by the Bulgarian Secret Service, don't forget.
Yes, and of course they managed to get him a gun. But if you had to put the hit on somebody, like in Sicily, and they got guns all over the place in spite of the gun control laws, you could still get one for a premeditated crime.
Right, but it's
for
nothing.
A non-premeditated crime, then there's a problem.
It's nothing like in the United States, though. I mean, did you see today's newspaper? A guy shot up an elementary school because he was displeased with his son's grades. You know, that kind of insanity is what this country is known for, and it's gotten out of hand, and we've got to do something about it.
It's pretty bad.
Yes, it's farcical.
You were in Europe, how's like the freedom of speech there compared to here?
For a good 2.5 weeks, I wasn't in an English-speaking country, so it was kind of hard to tell. I mean, there seemed to be freedom of speech, not as much as you might expect here.
Yeah.
But what you did see, I think, was important. For instance, walking by a university in Belgrade, you knew, even though you couldn't read, that the signs were anti-war signs, and you knew that there was a spirit there of people, saying things against what was going on, and that was so important. And you saw graffiti on certain statues in other cities, and even though some might think of that as defacing things, it's also a sign of uprising, rebellion.
Also, the graffiti you would see in case like that actually has something to say, unlike the graffiti you would see in, say, New York City, where somebody's just trying to leave their mark.
Not really, because the graffiti I saw in Sofia, Bulgaria said Guns and Roses and among other things.
Yeah, but you could read it. No, you can't even do that with New York graffiti.
Well, that's true, but the thing is, at least it was something. It was an expression, even though it didn't really say anything. It was just, its existence was an expression. So I kind of grew to look for that.
So it's like a sign of change over there.
Yeah. I mean, graffiti is good when it says something. It's best when it says something. Other than that, it can be artistic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you opening up the teleconference line, or?
Not this week.
Not this week?
We'll figure out when we're going to do that next.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
All right, so I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks for calling. 632-6901, good morning.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Are you guys going to do a teleconference? You have to do it, come on.
We can't do it this week.
How come?
It's 1:31, we only have 29 minutes left. We have to, start the teleconferencing, early. But look, what you've got now is better than a teleconference. You're speaking to potentially everybody on Long Island.
I know, but when you're
in
Connecticut, you hook up a girl.
Well, there's all. Why are you calling those expensive party line type things? They're only $5 a minute.
Yeah, that's a big difference there.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
But anyway, when you saw the graffiti, what kind of stuff did you see?
A lot of scribbling and things like that. Some, lots of rock bands. a lot of interest in Western rock bands. People wear shirts, you know, Def Leppard shirts. Selling in department stores were things like New York Jets jerseys and things like, and it wouldn't have been too good to bring something like that back.
You know what I've also heard, that now, of course, from people who have been there, if you bring college shirts in, you can sell them at a very nice profit.
I don't know why.
Even Stony Brook shirts, and I'm sure enough people from there have heard about Stony Brook because enough of them have been here. But
What about the graffiti? Was there anything like artistic?
I didn't really see all that much artistic graffiti, just a lot of scribbling and things like that. But, you know, when you're faced with all this oppressive architecture, especially in a place like Romania, you know, something slightly defacing that shows that not everybody is living under this quote-unquote model society, and there is some dissent. And, you know, it might just be a scribble, but it's the start of something. I saw lots of artistic things, but I wouldn't say graffiti was overly artistic there.
Yeah, but what kind of style was just scribble and stuff like that?
That's what I noticed. Some anti-war things painted in the street and on the sides of walls and things like that. So that had a definite message to it. Some of it was in Cyrillic, so it was a completely different alphabet as well. But you could sort of tell what the meaning was behind it. But I'm not that much of a graffiti judge. You know, I like some graffiti people in New York to go and take a look at that kind of thing and compare it.
Yeah, because some of my friends are graffiti artists, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they do a lot of that stuff. I just want to know, but...
Well, going over there, you appreciate a lot more because there's a lot less of it. You know, walking through New York, you don't really think about it that much. And I don't think it really has that much meaning in New York anymore.
Yeah, especially when it's on every delivery van in Chinatown.
Yeah, I mean, can people read those things? Because they know what you know what's being said on them.
Yeah, of course.
Really, on these trucks.
Uh huh.
Well, I'll have to have somebody guide me through this because I'd love to know what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
What you mean, the graffiti or the Chinese writing?
No, the Chinese writing. Of course, they know what that means. But the graffiti on, say, a truck that passes you by on the expressway.
If you know how to write the letters, then you know what it says.
Uh huh.
And if you know what they're talking about, then you have to be into graffiti artistry and stuff like that.
Uh huh. Are there books on the subject?
No, it's sort of like a street-type thing.
Well, I think it'd be fascinating to study this a little bit more, you know.
Maybe you could write a book.
I doubt that.
Why not?
It depends. If you know a lot about it...
Because if you write a book, then nobody's going to read it.
If you write a book, nobody's going to read it. Who told you that?
How many books do you think you have to print?
Well, I know.
You know, like, if you write a book about graffiti,
uh-huh.
People aren't going to read it because they're going to say, oh, then it must be stupid graffiti.
I have a better idea. How about this? A really cool street smart film about graffiti artists. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
That would do it.
And hey, that's how guys like Spike Lee got their start, doing stuff like that.
Or something that involves skateboarding and stuff like that, or something like that, you know?
Yeah, well, you can have a skateboarding sort of subplot going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, kind of like a documentary. Yeah. You know anybody in film school? And get equipment?
No.
Documentaries
meet
are porn
somebody.
Now. You gotta, you know, docudramas. Now, that's where it's
right.
Comes. All right, well, listen, we've given you the idea now that could make you rich, so...
I did see this one thing, this one documentary about graffiti artists, but they didn't tell you how to do it. They just told you, like, about famous graffiti artists and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
How'd you learn how to do it? I mean, is there a way to learn how to do it, or is it just something you just pick up?
You have to pick it up. And I don't know exactly everything, you know. I learned it from my friends by watching what they do.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's how we learn everything in this life, by watching what our friends do.
Yeah. If you pick up habits, you pick up how to write the letters a certain way, and how to add little details and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But also, you have to learn how to read it.
Well, I'd like to learn more about it, because it's, you know, it's so omnipresent that you really should know what's going on around you.
There are the graffiti artists that call up this show.
Uh-huh.
One of them's name, John, I'm not going to give his whole name, but anyway. He's a skater. He lives out in Shirley. He lives by me. He does graffiti, and he knows a lot about it.
I think I like graffiti more that really is artistic, though, especially around here, because I just don't see that many. Most of it seems to be kind of vain, where people are just signing their names. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, he does both, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really get much out of that, but... you know, something artistic that's like a collage of some sort. That would be amazing.
Yeah, did you ever hear of a skate team called Team Smile?
I might, yeah, that sounds familiar. I think I have heard that name.
Yeah, that's what John Pennis is on it.
Uh-huh.
Oops, sorry, didn't do that.
Oh, I'm sure you'll have to pay the price for that at some point. But either way, thanks for filling us in.
All right, man.
All right. 632-6901. They used to have graffiti trains in New York, you know. Now it's all silver.
I guess the new service they put on, the paint doesn't stick too well to it. Matter of fact, no, there is one subway train that I know of that's still painted and, you know, red, the 7.
Uh-huh.
But even that's graffiti-free.
Good morning.
Hey, Eric. Hey, Matt. What's up?
Hey. What's up?
All right. Matt, how's the ankle?
It's getting better. It's still a little sore. That's one thing you didn't hear, Eric.
I
sprained my ankle last Friday dancing.
Well, I could believe that.
Yes, it was a pretty bad sprain, too. I mean, I wish I had done something a little more dignified, like basketball or football or something like that. But no, I was dancing.
Dignified than dancing. I mean, you know.
No, it means, football, you're running the risk and you're almost doing it on purpose. I mean, you know, dancing, people laugh at me.
Yeah, dancing's not too dangerous.
Dancing shouldn't be too dangerous anyway. Football, you expect it.
Well, slam dancing can be dangerous if you slam into the wrong things.
Yeah, but the worst thing about it is I didn't slam into anything. I just caught the edge of a patio. That's even worse.
Edge of a patio?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so embarrassing about it.
Those are dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, if we're at a Fishbone concert or something like that, stage diving, I landed wrong. You know, hey,
the first thing you
got to
do when you sprain your ankle is come up with a good story,
not
something embarrassing. You have an opportunity here to impress people. You're blowing it by telling people you sprain your ankle hitting a patio.
Yeah, this is terrible, isn't it?
No, I mean,
and considering how bad the injury was, it's even more embarrassing because it just shouldn't have happened. But
well, maybe we just shouldn't talk about that anymore.
I will not tell you is what song was being played because that would be trip. Yeah, no, don't say it.
How would the caller know this?
Because I probably mentioned it in passing.
I was talking to him last week because Matt, I was the guy that was sick.
I was
complaining about it.
You were sick and you were complaining about it, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, I got a lot of nerve there.
Yeah, and at that point I had my foot propped up on a stool and I was quite a distance away from the microphone. It was a really, real stretch.
Anyway, so Mr. Quail this week wasn't as intelligent as last week.
Well, he parallels the real Mr. Quail. And don't forget, the season premiere of Murphy Brown is this Monday, so he must not be very happy.
Oh, yes. I'm just dying to find out what they do with good old Mr. Quail.
I just say something really quick?
Sure.
Really quick.
All right, Brian and Vanessa, if you're out there listening, call me. It's Mike, because no one's home, so no one will hear the phone.
Well, you're home, and you'll hear the phone, right?
Well, I know, but...
Yeah,
like,
but he wants to hear the phone. He's
always
else.
Thought of yourself as nobody?
What?
Have you always thought of yourself as nobody?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, well, these are deep-seated problems which probably cannot be solved. So as long as you know that, that's you're making great progress here.
All right.
Thanks for calling and for allowing us to help you.
All right, thank you.
You know, there's a song, we were playing Lola before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song on that same album that sounds a lot like Lola that never gets played on the radio.
Really?
You know that song?
Run it by me.
Well, I'm gonna run it by everybody in a second.
I probably
give us a
know
chance to rest
said.
Our mouths for maybe 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called Ape Man. You ever heard that song?
I think I have. It's
a good
often.
Song. It's an environmentalist kind of a song, too. So I want everybody out there to sit back, relax for a second. We will try to get to everybody that's currently on the line, so don't cuss and swear if you're ringing the phone now. And we'll play this song, and we'll come right back. Ape Man from the Kinks, 1967, the same album that Lola is on. And you never hear this anywhere except WUSB in Stony Brook.
I'm so educated. life, cause I'm a strict vegetarian. But with the overpopulation and inflation and starvation and the greedy politician, I don't feel safe in this world no more. I don't wanna die in a nuclear war. I wanna sail away to a distant shore and make like an ape man. I'm an ape man, I'm an ape.
That's a nice song, isn't it? Ape Man by the Kinks. And my correction there, the album is 1970, not 67. I don't know why I said 67, but hey, you never hear that one on the radio.
Yeah, in its time, though, it got a decent amount of airplay.
In its time, yes.
Yes.
But time,
Lola still gets airplay on classic rock stations,
yeah,
true.
Yeah, it does. And if you missed the scandal that we're uncovering before... For some reason, they seem to have changed the original version to say Cherry Cola instead of Coca-Cola, and I don't know how they did it or why, but we continue to say Coca-Cola here at the radio station.
I continue to speculate that it was to accommodate the BBC, but we'll never know.
Well, I'm sick of accommodating them, but anyway, 632-6901 is our phone number. Article from, I'm not sure, I think it's the European, one of those newspapers over there. Spaniards are Europe's most foul-mouthed people, according to a new study. But while they will hurl insults with an enthusiasm, frequency, and decibel level unparalleled across the continent, they are far less likely to throw punches than their more tight-lipped neighbors, writes Roy Wickman in Alicante. Anthropology professor Olga Vinulares has spent 10 years researching the swearing habits of her countrymen. Can you imagine that, spending 10 years researching the swearing habits of your countrymen?
I thought they only did stuff like that here.
Concludes that the Spanish are more talk than action when they get hot under the collar. Vinueli's study of 2,500 students at Barcelona's Grillanueta Institute, it's not in the Spanish mood tonight, backs up North American findings that Spaniards will use an insult in situations where their European counterparts would begin rolling up their sleeves. What's more, they have a far greater store of colorful insults to choose from. The classic insults refer to members of the opponent's family, especially the mother, or to sexual preferences and abilities. In Chile, a Spanish four-letter word is used as slang for a Spaniard simply because the Spanish use it so often. However, many of the strongest insults are so popular that they can even be used as terms of endearment, and others are so intricate and poetical that they are guaranteed to end the argument with a smile. Insults used by the men have a strong sexual content, while women shy away from sexual remarks and prefer a straightforward idiot. What's more, men get at other men by questioning their virility, but accuse women of an excess of the same. The difference comes from Spain's agricultural rural tradition, says Vinuelis. The roles of men and women are being redefined, but changes in social reality take a long time to be incorporated into the language. In the field of insults, this change in roles still has not become completely apparent.
Well, it just brings up something that I picked up at the San Gennaro Festival last night, the dunking booth.
I was there.
Yes.
Only a couple of nights ago.
Yeah, I was, and yeah, you saw the dunking booth, and the fellow who was in the hot seat was lodging insults at the guys who were throwing the balls, obviously trying to get them mad enough so that they will eventually duck him.
Uh-huh.
But there was one thing he referred to. One thing he had in common with the guy's girlfriend is he can't get either of us wet.
I see, and that result in.
No, the guy missed anyway.
Oh, he missed. Well, there you go then. But interesting way of of accomplishing that. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. Good morning.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing? It's fine morning.
Well, we're fine.
I was wondering. I heard a comment on New York All News Station that will remain nameless about how what are the two groups fighting in Yugoslavia, the Muslims and the...
Well, it's the Bosnians and the Serbs, Muslims and Christians.
I believe it was the Serbs, correct me if I'm wrong, that the UN Security Council would like to oust from the world body.
Okay, what you heard was actually that's not in the war-torn area. The smaller republic of Yugoslavia, which now consists of only two of the original republics, they feel, I think the vote was 12-0, that they should reapply for membership in the UN and not just be granted a continuation of the old Yugoslavia's status. And that sounds fair to me, and I think, the world can judge based on what's been happening over there.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be
kicked
out. I
haven't heard the whole show, but I was wondering, did you at all get a chance to go into Yugoslavia?
Yes, I was in Belgrade for a couple of days.
What was the situation like there, if you could go into...
It was as if nothing was going on, only 100 miles away. It was life as normal. People did not seem to be aware of anything happening.
Really?
Yeah.
Is the news media so covering it up over there?
Well, I think they're reporting it, but certainly in a slanted way, I've heard. They're not really giving much credence to Bosnian claims of atrocities. But for the most part, I think people have a sense that... Bosnian Serbs are not the same as Serbian Serbs, and they're not really responsible for their actions. There's unease in the air, but just not a whole lot of it.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because I was watching, I believe it was Tom Brokaw on NBC,
uh-huh.
And he was there was a story about how there were mixed marriages between the Serbs and the Muslims,
uh-huh.
And before it just seemed common,
right?
Like as an everyday thing,
yeah.
And now it's so this, there's like torn apart between everything?
Yeah. It's really sad to see this happening.
The way you make it sound is, the way it is that the whole country is not torn apart. It's just separate sections. Am I correct? Or?
Well, keep in mind that Yugoslavia today is a different country than Bosnia. Of course, what's happening in Bosnia is completely different than what's happening in Yugoslavia. But right now, my impression is that they are completely apart from the situation and unaware of what's really happening.
So
I find
it make it easier if I say I'm referring to the old Yugoslavia because I'm not too familiar with the new situation.
Uh-huh. Well, the new Yugoslavia is simply the old Yugoslavia without Croatia and Bosnia and Slovenia and Macedonia.
You didn't get a chance to go into Bosnia or Croatia?
No, I didn't go through. I didn't have the opportunity to go through Croatia or Slovenia, and I didn't want to go through Bosnia. Serbia was enough for that one time. It was a bit frightening.
It seems very interesting to hear about.
I wondered, did I violate something by going there?
Well, what do you mean?
Somebody told me I might have violated the sanctions against Yugoslavia by going there and spending money.
Really? Because I know there was the chess guy, Fischer, I believe it was.
Well, yeah, he's definitely violating it. But, I didn't mean to do that. I mean, it wasn't my intention. Nobody told me I wasn't allowed in the country or wasn't allowed to leave.
Obviously, you didn't go directly in from New York.
No, I went from Czechoslovakia.
Okay, so then I guess Czechoslovakia doesn't have any sanctions.
Oh, no, wait, I went from Hungary. I'm sorry.
Neither, they don't either.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they don't, considering their status in the U.N.
Wow, so we're going to move on to another call.
Okay, thank you very much. It was very interesting.
All right.
Thanks for covering it for everyone.
Oh, it was my pleasure, I guess.
Take care.
Thanks for calling. You too.
Also, another little historical point.
Mm-hmm.
The government in Serbia is obviously Serbian nationalist. I mean, obviously, probably descendants of the old Black Hand Society that assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Milosevic, I believe is how you pronounce it. He is the leader of Serbia. However, this guy, Panic, who's actually an American citizen, is the leader of Yugoslavia. He should be more powerful, obviously, since Yugoslavia is composed of two republics and Serbia is only one. But he really isn't the one calling the shots at all.
It's influence, I guess, because it's almost the same thing. Who ran the Soviet Union, the Communist Party leader or the Soviet president?
Right.
And later on, when guys like Brezhnev and Gorbachev assumed both roles, it was obvious, but wasn't always. Okay. Brezhnev was a Soviet Party leader. Guys like Kosygin or whatever were the titular president of the Soviet Union, and they didn't do much of anything.
Yeah, that's true. Good morning.
Hi. What's up?
Not much. What's up with you?
What, this is Jesse Jackson. How's it going?
Was this about Jesse Jackson?
No, this is Jesse Jackson.
Oh, this is Jesse Jackson. Well, did you have a hard time getting through?
Oh, yeah, it rang a few thousand times, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, things like that happen sometimes.
Yeah, anyway, just,
Well, are you on a mobile phone or something?
Some advice.
Sounds like there's a vacuum cleaner going in the background.
Oh, it's probably, I'll turn the volume down on the radio.
Well, it doesn't sound like a radio. It just sounds like you have an appliance or something going.
No, nothing. I'm on a portable phone, maybe.
Portable phone, that'll do it, yep.
All right, well, is it, like, is it that bad? I mean,
no, it's not. You have a problem with that, Matt?
No, he's understandable.
Okay, we have no problem.
All right. Anyway, this girl I started seeing, like, I don't know, this is like a really bad situation for me. So that's why I'm calling.
We only have about a minute.
I mean,
this girl I've been seeing, and she's like incredibly possessive and everything.
Uh huh.
Thing is, I like want to break up with her, right?
Uh huh.
But I almost forced her to give me, like, I don't know if I can say this on the air, like a blowjob.
Yeah, no, you can't say that on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Eric, what's up?
How you doing?
Fine. And knowing that you don't have too much time, I'll just say a couple things.
Okay.
Okay, what you were saying about the Spaniards cursing a lot?
Yeah.
I could vouch for that. I had a Spanish exchange student over the summer. Everything was F this and F that and...
Oh, wait a minute.
Even in English?
Yeah, I mean, did he do it in English or did he do it in Spanish?
He did both of them.
So he's a bilingual cusser.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. I always thought you really knew a language when you could curse in it.
Yeah, and that's something, you know.
Oh, that's the first thing we taught him when he got over here.
Oh, you taught him, so you're responsible for this. He's probably bringing it back to his homeland.
Contributing
now.
To the delinquency of a Spaniard.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, great.
Yeah, well, that's something he can live with.
Now I feel bad.
Well, you know, but it is only words, though, as the article said. You know, the people that use that kind of language, at least Spaniards anyway, tend not to get violent as much.
Mm. Well, he never really got violent. He just used to curse and everything.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, some people use that as a release.
Mm. Also, what were you saying about the Dead Kennedy shirts?
Well, I was just saying people have all kinds of shirts for all kinds of, you know, Western music.
That makes me feel a lot better. You can't get them over here, but you can get them over there.
Oh, you can get them anywhere, really, if you look.
No,
but what's amazing is when you're over there in Eastern Europe, you notice that the people over there, except for the you know, relative lack of you know, any Africans, they look incredibly like white Americans. Mm-hmm. Incredibly like them.
Considering that so many white Americans descend from them, that shouldn't be too hard to believe.
Also, what you were saying, like, about the BBC-controlled radio.
Right.
Did you know the Sex Pistols?
Yeah.
When they released the song God Save the Queen,
mm-hmm.
they released it as a single, like, 2 days before Queen Elizabeth's 25th anniversary of her coronation.
Right.
And it was totally banned on all English radio stations.
Well, I think any kind of censorship like that is something that should be, widely condemned. And censorship should be censured.
Okay,
that's
well,
my view.
I'll let everyone else get their chance to talk.
Okay, well, we have time for about maybe one, two more calls. Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Is this Eric?
Yes, it is.
How you doing?
I'm fine, how are you?
Why isn't Matt on tonight?
Yes, I'm here too.
He's over there on the other side of the room.
Matt, it's Jay.
Okay, what's up?
Eric, how you been?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Is this Jay?
Yeah, we're running out of time, so please tell us what do you want to talk
about.
Wait,
Matt? Wait. Okay, wait. There's Matt over there and Jay over here. Okay. I just wanted to get my bearings.
No, I just want to say a couple of things. Why is there no teleconference tonight?
Well, why is there no teleconference tonight?
Simply because setting up a teleconference eats up a lot of time, which we didn't have.
Yeah, but it was more fun than listening to you guys talk.
Well, can you believe this? People call us up to say that talking to other people is more fun than hearing us talk.
Of course. Our answer to that is, whose show is it anyway?
Some of the stuff you say is pretty good.
Well, I think it's all of our shows, really. But
that's true.
But, you know, it's just a question of trust. You have to trust our judgment. And while this show may not feel very good now, in a couple of years, you'll realize how beneficial it was to you.
What do you mean by that?
In a couple of years, you'll know what I meant by that.
Yes.
You mean like I learned something by being on the show?
Well, maybe you will, or maybe you won't learn something that would have hurt you.
So, Eric, are you back permanently?
Permanence is something that I don't know the meaning of.
Big penis, I guess.
Yeah, right. Well, Jay, you got his last name, right? You got his phone number, his social security number, and his credit report, and we'll deal with him good. Good morning.
Yeah, it's me again. I'm sorry for saying that, but you didn't have to hang up on me like that.
Oh, that's okay. Now we're all friends here, and it's almost time for us to go. So let's go out with our closing theme, which I believe is over here. And Matt, why don't you say something while I'm feeling.
Oh, is that the official closing theme, the unofficial closing theme,
everything
or
here
the
is,
semi-official?
Everything
closing
here
theme?
Is unofficial.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, if it's unofficial, then you can pick any cut you wish.
Okay, that is the official. No, the unofficial theme.
Okay, the official unofficial theme.
Yes. This has been Brain Damage, and it will be again next week, I suppose, when one or more of us will be here, and who knows what will happen. But the big guy is up next, and he is preparing his program for your listening enjoyment. I want to thank everybody for calling in and for voicing their opinions and whatnot. And I guess keep doing whatever it is you do, right?
Right.
And just don't hurt anybody when you do it. And don't hurt yourself. Yeah, that kind of thing. Have a good week. Good night.